committee. We're going to have a public hearing on both 3183 and then 2747, and then perhaps move 3183. We will not move 2747 during this portion of Senate revenue. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3183. Lizbeth, do we have anyone signed up to testify? And listen, okay. If you want to talk about the amendments that seem to be in play here.
Chairman Deckard and committee members, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin Mahar with the Legislative Revenue Office. So with House Bill 3183, you just have two amendments, a dash A14 and dash A15. So now the A14, as you recall, this bill originally had single sales, the mass transit payroll tax, and the R&D credit in the A and gross bill. So what the A14 does, though, is deletes the R&D portion, and it just has the single sales corporate apportionment formula. And it changes that slightly. It delays the implementation of that single sales change. So it increasing the sales factor of the corporate apportionment formula from 80%, again, that's beginning May of 2003, to 90% sales factor, and then the 5% payroll and property tax factors. But this is going to begin July 1st, 2005, where the other version in your A and gross version, it began in May of 2005. And also, it is going to then increase the sales factor of the corporate apportionment formula to 100% sales beginning July 1st, 2008, a few years later, then begins 100%. Now, this amendment also has a little additional language to clarify the Longview Fiber Amendment, which is providing an exemption to recent changes in that corporate apportionment formula and under certain conditions. So it's allowing forest product companies with 300 to 400,000 acres of forest land, which is what we had in the A and gross bill, but then it also adds language that the company has to process at least 20% of its total wood chip supply from residue generated within the state. So basically this company gets over 20% of their wood chip supply from Oregon mills, and they will then be allowed to have a double weighted sales corporate apportionment formula, again the same time frame beginning on or after July 1st 2006. So with this revenue impact for just the single sales portion, you can see it's reduced from what your original A and gross bill had, because you've lost a year there. You're just beginning in 2006-07. And it's got a revenue loss of $5.7 million in the, just in the 05-07 biennium. And then the 07-09, it goes up because you've got two full years there. So it's a loss of $23 million. Now, also in the A14, you're leaving in place of the A and gross bill the mass transit payroll tax increase. So this payroll tax increase is just 0.1% of the wages. Nothing has changed in this. It still begins on or after July 1st, 2004, in the exact same language you have in the A and gross bill. And again, this revenue impact was roughly $6 million for the 03-05 biennium for TriMet and $681,800 for the Lane Mass Transit. So I also want to bring out and make sure everybody at least has it in front of them and they know this is a source of information, because I've given this out to a lot of people in the audience, and I just want to make sure everyone's aware that there is, I have given you data the Department of Revenue has provided on basically the changes that occur and what industries benefit and things from the movement to a higher weighted sales factor in the corporate apportionment formula. So I've just kind of gone through on this first page and summarized all that for you. Just some of the key points is basically there will be a net reduction in tax revenue. There's 1,458 corporations that experience a reduction if this had taken place in tax year 2000. So this is the most recent year that we have data for corporations where it's complete. So you do have, in 2000, you would have had a $25.8 million reduction in tax liability, and going from 80% to 90% in the manufacturing industry is the one that benefits the most. And on average, there's roughly about 79% of that total tax reduction goes to corporations with income that's above $1 billion. Now, on the increase in tax revenue, again, there's winners and losers. So the ones who get the increase in tax revenue, it's not very big on average compared to the reduction in tax revenue. So there's more corporations that have a tax increase. There's 2,661 corporations that would have experienced a tax increase if we had moved to a 90% sales in tax year 2000. Then there would be roughly $7.6 million increase in tax liability. You can see that's pretty small compared to the $25.8 million estimated reduction. And basically with that, you've got about 40% of the tax increase is paid by corporations with income above $1 billion. So basically that's just for your own background on the single sales issue, and you've got lots of tables there if you have any other questions about various industries and stuff. So that's...
Sure. Yes, Senator Corcoran.
So just for clarification, Elizabeth, essentially what would happen in this with winners and losers is that 2,600 corporations who I guess would be characterized as primarily selling their product or their professional work or their trade in the state would be penalized in exchange for folks who sell outside the state.
And Chairman Deckard and Senator Corcoran, I think the main thing here is just, you know, recognizing that these are all multi-state portion companies, so it's not any Oregon-only companies.
Right.
So let's just make sure that's clear. But, yes, it's ones that have a large portion of their total sales here in Oregon, and maybe they don't have much payroll and property here in the state.
Right.
So they're the ones who then experience an increase. Because if you can get it compensated for, you know, an increase in the sales factor, if you have a lot of payroll and property in the state, then you can get that compensated because those are reduced. But it's those corporations that don't have much payroll and property, and the sales in Oregon is a large portion of their total sales.
Thank you.
Other questions for Lizbeth? Ms. Kelly?
Do you want me to go through the A15?
Ms. Kelly, can you hold off one second? I jumped ahead of myself here. Please.
Mm-hmm. Chairman Deckard, I just want to say that with the A15, the only difference here is you've got the exact same language you have in the dash A14. That's all incorporated because we're just deleting portions of the regular A and gross bill. But with the A15, you've added now R&D credit. And this is a modified version from what you had originally in your original A and gross bill. This does still expand the base. It basically is eliminating those limitations on the field of qualified and basic research under current law, and so there will be no limitation at all on basic research, but it isn't increasing the maximum amount of the credit per business as high as your original estimate was, which was going up to $1 million. So this goes, the cap that basically businesses have on the credit is $500,000 under current law. This goes up to $750,000. And in this also, your original bill, the A and gross began in 2005. This begins in 2006. So, and your A and gross bill had an elimination of the sunset date. This just extends the sunset date on the R&D credit to January 1st, 2012. So the revenue impact on that portion, the R&D credit, it's just another $11 million. And again, the reason why this is quite a bit smaller is due to reducing the cap and reducing the number of years in the 05-07 biennium from 2 years to just 1 year. And the total, so you're clear on what you have here because you've got the single sales and the R&D together. If you look on the second page of your revenue impact statement, basically that shows you that your total impact for both of those changes would be $16.8 million in the 05-07 biennium and $70.8 million in the 07-09 biennium. And please note that with the R&D credits, if you're extending that sunset, and that sunset under current law is in January 1st, 2008, since you're extending that sunset, there's an additional $10 million revenue impact in the 08-09 biennium that's just due to that sunset extension. So everyone's clear. This does grow quite fast in the 07-09 biennium, but that's $10 million of that is due to the sunset extension. And then you've got the Lane and TriMet Mass Transit District's payroll tax increase in here also, just like your A and gross bill did.
And that's if they did the pay. That would be if they did the 0.01%.
Yeah.
Senator Metzger.
Yeah, Lewis, just to clarify that again, what you were talking about was the sunset extension. So on 08-09, where we see this leap from 07-08 from 27.9 million to 42.9, that 42.9 then does not totally represent new cost. It $10 million of that, what you're saying, is existing. So if we looked at it as, if you wanted to look at the total as a net change, then you're, what you're saying is about 32.9 compared to 27.9. Is that accurate?
Senator, that's correct. So you could say that for the 709 biennium, it's really $60 million or $61 million of new, you know, impact, where the $10 million is just due to allowing that existing credit to continue.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the clarification.
Ms. Kelly.
Thank you, Chair Decker, and members of the committee. My name is Marsha Kelly, and I'm the lobbyist for the Women's Rights Coalition of Oregon. Our members are the American Association of University Women, with over 3,000 members in Oregon, the Older Women's League of Oregon, the Oregon National Association of Women, the Oregon Women's Political Caucus, the Salem YWCA, and Delta Kappa Gamma, which is an educational honorary for both retired and current teachers in the state of Oregon, with approximately 4,000 members. Have not had a whole bunch of time to look over either the A14s or the A15s. My message is basically this. You're talking about this going into effect in the 2005, 2007, or 2009. I believe you have some legislation pending that would create a tax reform committee. Tax reform is something that's long overdue in the state of Oregon. In 1990, the voters passed ballot measure 5, which greatly affected the way local governments do business and greatly affects the general fund revenue that the state funds for education. In addition, we had ballot measure 11 in the mid part of that decade. Tax reform, total tax reform, has not been addressed. I applaud the vote that you did last week on the graduated income tax surcharge to get us over the hump. I don't think you need to put in legislation in this session something that wouldn't take effect and do it right at the end of the session. I'd be very happy to help support any sort of organized tax reform that will stop moving the burden of taxes from a fair and equitable taxation system to the individual taxpayer. And that's, I believe, what has happened since ballot measure 5.
Thank you very much. Questions for Ms. Kelly? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Anyone else want to testify on House Bill 3183? Close public hearing on House Bill 3183. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2747. We may return to this in a few hours, but this would be the real time for public testimony. Mr. Bishop, Ms. Staten, Ms. Reed, do you want to come up?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, I'm Bruce Bishop. I'm here this afternoon on behalf of the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. With me is Gwen Dayton, who's general counsel for the Hospital Association. We appreciate this opportunity to provide testimony for the Revenue Committee on House Bill 2747. Before I start with more substantive testimony, I would like to acknowledge the assistance that we have received from legislative leadership and from the governor's office in bringing us to this point of having an additional opportunity to sustain the Oregon Health Plan and hospital benefits in that plan. As you will see in the amendments before you, there is proposed to be both a hospital tax and a tax on Oregon Health Plan contractors, as well as a tax on long-term care providers. There are important linkages among these three taxes, and that's the reason that the taxes are combined before you in House Bill 2747. The hospital tax, however, has not previously been considered, and that's why we appreciate particularly this opportunity to provide testimony about the importance of that. The Oregon Health Plan is is at a crossroads. The amendments that you're considering will allow us to continue the Oregon Health Plan, and a critical component of that plan, which is hospital coverage. Hospital coverage is important for rural and urban communities throughout the state. It's important for patients who need the care, and it's important for the communities where they live. The amendments, I believe, at least in the last version I've seen, are Section 9, which specifically address where these hospital funds are going to be spent. And I'm referring to the Dash 14s. I understand there may be a
15.
Dash 15s. Okay, I haven't seen those yet. And I believe those have probably minor modifications.
We took PACE out of everything.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, you have to give
it is
your timing. You have to let people think about it for a second, or you relieve the tension.
I'm learning.
It is in Section 9 where it is specified the purposes for which these funds will be used. And it is important, I think, to point out that the legislation will direct that the funds be used for increased hospital reimbursement and for the purposes of restoring hospital coverage for the OHP standard population. There are a number of details, as well as the overall policy issues that are contained in this draft. We would be glad to answer any questions that the committee may have, either about the policy or about the specific provisions in the bill. And we would urge your prompt consideration of these amendments and favorable action on the Dash 15 amendments to House Bill 2747.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Bishop?
Yeah.
Senator Metzger.
I know, Bruce, that the folks have been involved in this in a long time, and I have not been one of those other issues. So if you could please just encapsulate what you see as the advantages for our hospital system in this legislation. You know, how will this help us, you know, in terms of our, you know, our federal relationships and as the bottom line benefit for providing health care? You know, briefly, I would appreciate that. Why this is important.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Metzger. The reason this is important is because, given the current economic situation that the state faces, there was a very real possibility that we would have continued with an Oregon health plan that had no hospital coverage. That would have been the case not only for urban hospitals, but for rural hospitals. No hospital coverage for the expansion population under the Oregon health plan. That would have created a significant cost shift of the responsibility of paying for that care onto employers throughout the state. And we would have lost the advantage of federal matching dollars that the state qualifies for under the Medicaid program. With this combination of hospital and contractor taxes, we are able to use the funds for federal matching purposes. We avoid the cost shift, and most importantly, I think we are able to provide care for low-income Oregonians who need to go to the hospital and who need attention to their medical care needs. So it is both an appropriate step for health policy reasons, for fiscal reasons, but I think most importantly for the health care needs of low-income Oregonians.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Thank you. Do we have a dollar figure associated with the federal dollars that this, if we adopt the Dash 15?
I can give you a general estimate. The agency, I think, could probably give you a more specific amount. it is my understanding that this package with the hospital tax and the contractor tax is estimated to produce about $77 million in state resources. That would be matched with approximately $115 or $20 million of federal. So we're talking about something in the neighborhood of $200 million of total resources that otherwise would be shifted onto the business community to pay for the care not financed by these state and federal dollars. I think in rough terms it's about a $200 million package.
Ms. Payton.
Thank you, Chair Deckard, and members of the committee. I don't have comments in addition to Mr. Bishop's, but largely I'm here to answer questions that you might have.
So what are the mechanics of assessing the hospital tax?
Chair Deckard, members of the committee, the way this will work is hospitals will be asked to complete a form that gives the department the information they need to determine the amount of the assessment. That form will be due 75th day. Let me get the exact language. Yeah. 75th day following the end of the calendar quarter for which the assessment is being reported. So essentially there's a look back at the net revenue of the hospital. There'll be a determination on the department level as to the assessment rate. That rate will be applied to the revenue, and that will be the assessment that will be due to the department.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I just thank you for all the hard work you've done. I know it's been a very difficult time. We're talking about this money is actually outside of the $275 million that was in the human resource budget. Will there be a difference?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, that's correct. The $275 million did not include a hospital benefit for the OHP standard population, and this would restore that benefit to the program.
Question, healthcare is integrated, and in my part of the country, we have a lot of rural health clinics that are not actually hospitals, but people are taken care of, receive a lot of service. I know there's some federally qualified clinics too. Is there any provision in any of these things that can include or will help those people stay in business? Because most of those things are about ready to shut down in this situation.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, this program is specifically for the purposes of hospital care, and the consequence of not approving the program as it's designed is, our concern is that a number of hospitals would in fact close, and that would be a even more significant detriment to those communities.
So that all the money that's coming is going to go all the hospitals, or will we go to other potential health care issues, or has there been any discussion along those lines?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, the funds that are available here in this measure, the hospital assessment and the contractor assessment will go for the purposes of hospital payments.
Thank you.
Senator Sharp.
Thank you. Just haven't been focused on this issue, so just bear with me. But in a nutshell here, it seems to me that the hospitals are agreeing to tax themselves so that we can qualify for federal funds. Is that as simple as it is? I mean, pretty much?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, that's correct.
Who wants to?
Here. Anyone want to grab the gavel? Anybody else? Any other questions? Do you have any other testimony?
Should I just grab this?
Okay. Just the list. Lynn Reed, Aaron Kelly, Luis, Carabello.
Mr.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Erin Kelly Seal, and I'm Governor Kulongoski's policy advisor for Health and Human Services. I don't have too terribly much to add about the -B 15 amendments. Just wanted to express our support. Portions of those amendments should look familiar to you. They are the long-term care assessment and the Medicaid managed care assessment. Both were parts of House Bill 2152. A couple of technical changes have been made to the managed Medicaid managed care assessment piece. Those technical changes are supported by the Medicaid managed care organizations and also have been incorporated in yet another bill, just to be sure that we have coverage. But the new pieces that are included in the B-15 amendments to House Bill 2747 are the hospital tax and the tax on the program for all-inclusive care for elderly persons, otherwise known as the PACE program. I have Luis Caraballo here and Lynn Reed from the Department of Human Services to help answer any technical questions that may come up. I know also that advocates for the PACE tax are waiting in the wings to testify as well. But I just wanted to speak generally to the state's intent with respect to these revenue and how they will help support the Oregon Health Plan, particularly the hospital tax and the Medicaid managed care tax. Assuming all of the federal approvals are obtained, the state expects the Medicaid managed care assessment to generate approximately $57 million in state revenue and plans to use that revenue both to increase capitation rates for Medicaid managed care organizations and to provide an emergency hospital benefit to the Oregon Health Plan standard population. With respect to the hospital provider tax, assuming all federal approvals are obtained, the state expects that assessment in the next biennium to generate approximately $49 million in state revenue. Some of that revenue will be used to enhance the emergency hospital benefit that will be paid for primarily by the Medicaid Managed Care Organization assessment. Some of that revenue will be used to reinstate retroactive eligibility, which is a policy within the Oregon Health Plan that allows Oregon Health Plan enrollees to be deemed, once deemed eligible for the plan, to be deemed eligible on the date of their application as opposed to the first of the month following. And Senator Nelson, in that respect, retroactive eligibility added back to this program will benefit the federally qualified health centers that you were asking about earlier. In addition, some of the revenue from the hospital assessment will be used, will be applied toward increased reimbursement for hospitals. And so those things together, we believe, will greatly benefit Oregon and the Oregon Health Plan enrollees that will that will be served in the next biennium. So I'm available for general questions and offer these two also for more technical questions about these Medicaid provider assessments.
Senator Nelson.
So, as you talked about, they'll benefit the federally qualified rural health care plan, so it doesn't benefit the rural health care plans because they're not federally qualified. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I'm Lim Reed, administrator with the Office of Medical Assistance Programs in the Department of Human Services. And the concept of being able to restore retroactive eligibility will benefit any of those clinics where someone who is otherwise uninsured may come to access care. So in that respect, it would benefit a rural health clinic as well as a federally qualified health center. If someone who's uninsured comes in, needs services, those services are provided, that can establish a date for applying for the Oregon Health Plan, and then they can be found eligible back to that date of request. And so that's what's accomplished with that piece of the funding.
It seems to me that healthcare is an integrated thing, you know, and the health clinics, whether they're federally qualified or rural, all benefit somewhere or another. And, I mean, one of the issues that I have is how do you keep these things going and keep them open? Because I know in my part of the country, those rural clinics, they're not federally qualified because maybe they can't take care of all the paperwork. They provide the same services. They just don't have the staff to do all that, but they do provide some very good services and take loads off hospitals. So, you know, I'm advocating for those folks, particularly the rural folks, and I understand the federally qualified people are there too. Another follow-up. Okay. There was some language, and we passed out the long-term provider thing, and there was some different language. Has that language been changed in this bill now so that everybody's happy with it? And we seemingly there were some problems with it. Do you recall
it's
that?
Fine.
Has that been changed?
Senator, it's the language that was in the original version on the House side that didn't get incorporated into that.
Well, that original language has been incorporated.
Right, it's in here. It's the PACE portion of the amendment, if you want to look at it. It's at the end.
And how did the PACE get... I was a little bit frustrated with that on 2152. My understanding, maybe Ms. Reed, if you could comment on that, how did the PACE get deleted from 2152?
I'm going to defer to Aaron Kelly on that one.
One of the challenges about the PACE program is that it is a hybrid program, and so it's not clear how the federal government will view it. And originally, they had come in and approached the department and wanting to be part of the long-term care facility assessment and had negotiated with us around the separate set of amendments that you see in the B-15s now. When the concept of the Medicaid Managed Care Organization tax came about, we've been advised regularly since we started looking at these more seriously by counsel in Washington, D.C. that has expertise in this area, and there was a question as to whether or not they may also qualify under the federal regulations as a Medicaid managed care organization, and so they were included in both, and there was, in the last minute rush to have the 2152s published, there was a decision that they should be in one and not another so they wouldn't be taxed twice. Unfortunately, they were left in the tax that actually did not benefit them as opposed to the PACE provisions that are part of the long-term care tax. So these amendments delete them from the Medicaid Managed Care Organization tax component and now carry forward the amendments they had originally drafted on the House side that establish a separate application and process to tax them under a long-term care facility assessment, a program that looks more like that. So I don't know, Chair Deckard, if that responds well enough to your question, but hopefully it's about as much as I know.
Other questions for the panel? Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Catterbio.
Thank you.
Never had a chance to speak. Would anyone else like to testify? This is going to be the last public hearing we have on this. We'll probably recess until 4:15. If anyone else would like to speak, F. Chips or anyone else on 2747, this would be your opportunity. Great. Close the public hearing, House Bill 2747. We will recess the Senate Revenue Committee to, let's say, 4 p.m.